This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We are joined right now by Carl Goldman and his wife, Jerry. They took a cruise for his wife's birthday present. And so I want to bring in Carl, I believe, and Jerry. Carl, first of all, thanks for joining us. So you go on a cruise in Asia, and the plan is what? You guys think this is going to be an awesome way to celebrate your wife's birthday. You leave when, and you expect to come back to America when?
We left January 19th, and we had no news when we left of the coronavirus outbreak. We started seeing reports on the news a couple days into the cruise. What happened was a passenger from China got off the ship in Hong Kong, which was one of our ports. Days later, which was the last day of our cruise, they discovered he had come down with a virus. So our captain, at double speed into Yokohama Harbor, Japanese health officials came on board, and 10 people tested positively.
So they tell you that you're not allowed to leave. How big is your room, Carl?
We're one of the fortunate ones. We have a mini suite, and so it's one of the larger rooms here that also gives us a deck so we can stay outside on the porch. There are passengers. I met a couple from Atlanta. They're in their 80s, and their grandson had given them a free cruise. The four of them, the grandson's friend, the grandson, and the two elderly passengers are in a cabin about half the size of ours with no windows and no fresh air. And then we met another couple that had young kids in the same kind of cabin. And I thought, oh my goodness. So now we are feeling so fortunate. Anytime we don't, we just think of those poor souls.
So have they told you how long you're going to have to stay? Because you're basically, what's the status now? You're allowed to leave your room for like an hour a day to walk around? Or what's the status of your days now?
Because we have an outside porch, we don't go outside up on the deck as often as the ones on the inside. So
right.
we've only gone up twice for 1 hour at a time during the 8 days we've been here. The ones in the inside cabin get a much higher priority, and they're cycling through a lot faster, and that's very understandable.
So have they told,
good.
Have they told you how long you're going to have to stay? Have you gotten any update on how long the quarantine is going to last?
Yeah, and we're now up to 175 victims of the coronavirus. There were about 39 more today. Every day there's more that are coming down, so the numbers just keep increasing. We were issued thermometers about 5-6 days ago. We mandatorily have to take our temperature. If it goes above 99.5, that's the first sign of trouble. So we take our temperature more than 3 times a day, because anytime we cough, sneeze, or our nose runs a little bit, we freak out. And the thermometer makes us it's very comforting when we know our temperature's not there. We're now scheduled to leave on January 19th, which means we can fly back. The ship's in Yokohama right now. We can fly back from Tokyo, which is about an hour away, and be back in Los Angeles, hopefully also on the 20th because of the day time difference. That's still very fluid because obviously we're in a very fluid situation.
So do you feel like you are in danger? You said 30-some-odd more people came down with the coronavirus today, because I think it's 8:30-ish, if I'm not mistaken, at night in Japan right now. Do you feel like this thing is actually making it more dangerous keeping you on the boat than if you were allowed to go off the boat somewhere else as these numbers continue to rise? And do they tell you, I guess it's a two-part question, every time somebody tests positive, does that extend the 2-week quarantine, or have they told you anything about that?
Yes. No, it does not extend the quarantine. That's the good news. The first few days, we also thought we were going to have to be quarantined in California when we returned. That also is not the case. The U.S. Embassy contacted us and said no. And also, you know, we've been blogging on our website, hometownstation.com, about our predicament. And a couple of our readers said, stay in Japan, don't come back to Santa Clarita. And I want to assure everyone that once we make it through the 14 days, we're better prepared. And, I mean, we have less chance of giving the virus to anyone than anyone.
So we're talking to Carl Goldman, and he is in Japan right now on this cruise ship. So are you in any way feeling claustrophobic being stuck in this room? I know you said you have a balcony and you have a little bit bigger room than some people, and you talked about how you feel fortunate compared to other people on the interior of the ship. But having said that, it has to be a little bit claustrophobic to be with your wife in this tiny enclosure and not know when you're going to be able to leave, right?
Actually, it hasn't impacted us that way. And anytime we feel sorry for ourselves, we think of the couples I mentioned earlier. And about every 3 days, the Diamond Princess has to go back out to sea to get more water and work the desalinization and also empty the bilges.
Right.
You need to Google. You might want to Google that to see what that means. But they have to go far enough out, so it's about a 24-hour process. And that breaks up the trip as well, or our isolation as well. Today, we just got back early this morning after leaving yesterday, and the captain was actually, the captain decided to turn the ship around at the dock. So now we have a beautiful view of a bridge. I'm looking at, right now I'm sitting out on our porch and I'm looking out at the lights of the skyline of Yokohama, and it's quite beautiful, quite dramatic. So that breaks it up. During the day, we watch ships and boats go by. When we were facing the other way, we had all the excitement of the ambulances and the press staying over there in our isolated dock. So there's enough to amuse us. As radio station owners, we're working 8, 9, 10 hours a day and then answering emails, friends, other people, as they've learned about our situation, are communicating with us. So our day is pretty much filled. We spend the evening, we call it movie night, and get to pick a different movie each day. On the first, we traveled with friends of ours from St. George, Utah, and they have an adjoining cabin. On the first day of our cruise, we had the officials unlock the door that separates our cabin. So we actually go back and forth throughout the day. That's, I think, what saved our marriage.
Now, what about food? Do they deliver food to your rooms every day, all the meals? How does that work?
Yeah, we actually have more food than we can possibly eat. We get a menu for lunch and dinner that the previous night. We just filled ours out for tomorrow. They serve us 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We get a knock on the door. We have to put masks on before we open the door. The crew, the Princess crew, has been phenomenal. They also have masks and gloves. They hand us a tray, and we eat our food. Then we put the tray back outside, just like you would do room service in a hotel.
Now, you said that you watch movies and you have the internet and everything else. Have you talked with any American embassy officials or had any conversations about this situation with them?
The U.S. embassy sends emails every day updating us. Princess has been really good sending out emails. And, of course, we can access the internet, so we've got access to anything. The captain, we have a speaker in our room, and about 4 times a day, the captain will get on the speaker and notify us of what's going on and keeping us in the loop. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, one of her staff contacted us personally yesterday and asked if they could help. All of our local officials who we're close with and friends with, from our congressman to our state senator, assemblywoman, mayor, councilman, they all are texting on a regular basis to see if there's anything they can do to help.
Will you ever go on another cruise?
Absolutely. You know, that's, a lot of people ask us that. We love Princess. We love cruising. We work in hyperdrive back home 24/7 as owners of KHTS Radio. And so when we cruise, it's a chance to unwind, and we find ourselves only working 6, 7 hours a day even when we'd vacation. But yeah, we were already planning cruises ahead of time. And Princess, a couple days, announced that all passengers would be getting not only a full refund, but also, and for all of our expenses, our hotel in Tokyo, our excursions, tips, whatever we need to get back to our home in Santa Clarita, all that's being reimbursed by Princess, and they've issued a free cruise to everybody in the future.
Hometownstation.com is the website where you are updating people on your stay on the cruise, your quarantine. You said that the internet works fine. Are you finding that the news stories are you're learning things faster from the news or from the updates from the captain and the cruise?
Sometimes a little of each. But the one thing we have learned from day one, like we never knew this before, is there's so much misinformation on social media. So we know to take that for what it is and just put it up on the pile and try to understand what the real facts are as they come in. But it's been a mix of both.
How old are you and your wife?
I am 66. My wife just hit 60.
Have you had any scares? You said you're taking your temperature three times a day. How scared of the coronavirus are you?
We're not. I mean, about 3 days ago, 65 came down with it in that one day. And that was a little freaky, but with the thermometers and everything else, it's out of our control. So no, we are not feeling that way. And when you do the math, there's 3,666 passengers and crew on here. And even though we're up to 175, which is a really big number, if you do the math and the percentages, that's not that high. The one thing we've discovered is there's no rhyme or reason to the people who have gotten it. It had to have been passed on from the Hong Kong passenger who we call Ground Zero. But our ship is made up of probably 60% Japanese, 10% Chinese, 10% American, 10% Canadian, and then the rest are mixed between English, Australian, and other countries. It's been totally mixed as to who's gotten and who hasn't. I think the Americans now are up to about 36, and I believe there were about 273 Americans, maybe a little more, but probably. But the Japanese have gotten it. Every possible person that we haven't figured out any rhyme or reason to who's gotten it. Ages have not seemed to make a difference. Where they were on excursions or where they were throughout the ship doesn't seem to make a difference. It's kind of like going to Vegas or choosing the lottery here.
We're talking to Carl Goldman, his wife Jerry with him. He's 66, she's 60. Hometownstation.com. They are quarantined right now on the cruise ship in Japan. I'll get you with a sports question on the way out. You are close friends with Jeffrey Lurie, who is the Eagles owner. You went to college together. Have you heard from him?
Yes, we've been texting, and his wife and my wife have been texting quite a lot. They, like all of our friends, are concerned. I wish the Eagles were in the Super Bowl. I've got a funny story about the Super Bowl. So we watched the Super Bowl here on the ship, which was early Monday morning, and they fed it through NHK, which is the Japanese channel that's similar to the BBC. So the feed was the same feed you saw, but the audio was all in Japanese. I learned two words. There is no Japanese translation for the 49ers.
Oh, that's interesting. What's the best movie? You said you're having movie night every night. What's the best movie you've seen on the ship so far?
Tonight we watched Jack Ryan, which was fun and a good diversion. We watched the Harriet Tubman movie a few nights ago. And then there are a few of our favorites that we've watched over again, The 100-Foot Walk, I think it's called. And then there are movies when we were getting toward the end of our actual cruise, we were down to Dumbo, which is not a good movie to watch.
Right.
And luckily, Princess has downloaded a lot of new movies for us to journey through. I've been posting on our blog which ones we watch each night and giving my own reviews of which to see and what not to see.
So what day are you expecting to be able to exit the ship?
We believe we will exit the ship late Tuesday, next Tuesday, Japanese time, which would be Monday, where you are, or Wednesday. When they first learned of the quarantine, the Japanese health officials came on board and tested, stopped by every single room. That turned out to be an 18-hour process. And so I suspect that on the last day after we hit that 14, they'll do the same. So we may not be leaving the ship as quickly as we wanted to.
I appreciate the call with Japan. We'll react to this, Carl Goldman and his wife.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Appreciate all of you hanging out with us on this Wednesday morning. Big news out there in the world of college football. Overnight, Colorado football coach Mel Tucker became, according to reports, Michigan State football coach Mel Tucker. We have a great Wins and Losses podcast up with Mel Tucker. Encourage you to go check it out. But Michigan State fills their vacancy. They went after Luke Fickell. He said no. They went after Pat Narduzzi. He said no. They went after Mel Tucker, and he initially said no. They kept going back. And evidently, they got a blockbuster deal worked out. It's good to be rich in the Big Ten and in the SEC. The benefit of all the dollars flowing in from their networks and their television deals is that they can basically outbid everybody else. Question now is whether Colorado will be interested in Eric Bieniemy, who is the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, wanted to get a head coaching job in the NFL, but now may have an opportunity to be the head coach of his alma mater at the University of Colorado. So that is a story that is worth tracking. The continued drama surrounding the NFL free agency is growing. This will be the most exciting element of NFL free agency we have ever seen. Continued reports trickling out of Dallas about what is going on with the decision that could be made by Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. The latest report is that the Cowboys have offered $33 million a year to Dak Prescott, but that they wanted more deal terms remaining there. And so the deadline continues to work its way out as we see whether Dak Prescott will or will not be willing to show up. The Chargers are, I would say, a major linchpin of the NFL free agent quarterback market, since they have the number 6 overall pick, I believe it is, in the NFL draft. And right now they have Tyrod Taylor as their starting quarterback. We will see what the Chargers have in mind going forward. We talked about Tua to open the show and the fact that he has been given a pretty solid bill of health. We'll talk with Dr. David Chow tomorrow in this same hour to find out what he thought about the report coming out from Tua Tagovailoa in terms of how healthy he is going to be. All of those things rolling together. We talked an hour or two about a report that I have, which I'll write about on Outkick later today, that Tony Romo is slotted to make $15 to $20 million, which is pretty wild to think about. He would become the highest paid announcer to ever call games in the history of American sports. That's a desperate move by ESPN and CBS to try and persuade the NFL that they need to be able to have as big of a deal as possible out there. But all of those things are stories that we are tracking. We're going to be joined by Shannon Spake here in a little bit to talk NASCAR. I am attempting to recover from being sick. Roberto, you sound like you're near death. Are you sick?
Yeah, I think I'm getting worse, man. I started feeling sick yesterday morning before I went to sleep.
Yeah, and then you got into work and now you feel worse. I went to bed last night at 7 o'clock because I felt so sick, which I haven't done in forever. And I had one, you know, when you're sick and you have like those fever dreams and you just keep waking up and like nothing really seems to make sense and everything else. That's kind of how I was all last night. So I feel like I'm in a little bit of a fever dream. The New Hampshire primary was going on last night and Bernie Sanders won it. And I can't, like, a part of me is just like, there's no way in real life that we're going to have a Donald Trump versus Bernie Sanders 2020 presidential election. Are we?
I think we are.
I think we are too. And I was like, maybe this is just the fever talking, but Bernie won. And the Democrats who hate Donald Trump are going to somehow nominate a 78-year-old socialist who had a heart attack this year. It's crazy. Like, of all the people you could nominate, he would be 79 at inauguration. And I don't know about you, but that's crazy to me. Like, I think
he should have won the nomination. I mean, 4 years ago, right? I mean,
yeah, right.
Honestly, yeah.
But I think, you know, we have an age limit on like how old you have to be president. You have to be 35 to be elected president of the United States. I think we should have a high end limit on how old you should have to be president too. Like, I don't think anybody over the age of 70 should be able to be elected president. That would give us a solid 35-year window from 35 to like 69. You could be elected president. That's a solid range of ages. I think about just how crazy it is to have two guys that are that old running against each other. It blows my mind. But that evidently is where we are headed in the wake of the New Hampshire primary. There's still a lot to be determined going forward. But I felt like when I woke up from my fever dream and looked at that, I was like, this is absolutely insane.
40 is the new 30. 80 is the new president.
79 years old. I mean, if you're fortunate enough to have had grandparents who lived to be 79 or 80 years old, can you imagine if they had been in charge of being president of the United States? I mean, it's crazy to me. So that is what is going on in the world. The world continues to spin in a crazy direction. But the NFL free agent market, I would say, is the biggest storyline that is out there right now. And the question of where Phillip Rivers is going to end up. We talked about yesterday where Tom Brady is going to end up. I read you those quotes from Teddy Bridgewater. And so I wanted to circle back around on this New Orleans Saints decision. I believe that Drew Brees is going to come back. But if Drew Brees doesn't come back, who do you go with? Taysom Hill as the quarterback of the future or Teddy Bridgewater as the quarterback of the future? I don't know that there's an easy answer here, because I think if you go with Teddy Bridgewater, you feel pretty good about the consistency. But I don't know how high his ceiling is. I think he's very much of a game manager at the quarterback position, which, given how good the Saints' defense is, can be a solid decision. But Taysom Hill, if you just saw what happened with Lamar Jackson, he seems to offer, given how smart Sean Payton is, the opportunity for there to be a higher ceiling, but also a much lower floor. Because Taysom Hill hasn't thrown the football very much. He's obviously a mobile quarterback. He's sort of the Swiss Army knife of the New Orleans Saints offense. And I read that quote from Teddy Bridgewater at the end of hour two, and it's hard not to root for him. But who do you go with? The Saints are actually in a really difficult spot if Drew Brees doesn't come back. If Drew Brees comes back, and I do think he'll come back for at least one more year, then I think they let Teddy Bridgewater go. And there are a lot of different teams that could theoretically be interested in Bridgewater as a starting quarterback. And then you groom Taysom Hill as the backup for Drew Brees to take over in the years ahead. But if Drew Brees lets you know that he is retiring, and I think he has to let you know in the next couple of weeks, who do you go with? Danny G, would you make the future of your franchise Teddy Bridgewater or Taysom Hill?
I really like Teddy Bridgewater. He proved that he could win and lead the franchise when Brees was out hurt. He's a leader for the team, even as the backup. I think that you'd be crazy to go with an unproven commodity in place of a guy like Bridgewater, where, yeah, you got to pay him, but he can be the face of your franchise and the continued leader of your franchise once Brees hangs it up.
Which way do you go, Dub?
Well, to me, Teddy is a guy that you could probably find in the draft and not have to pay so much money to. Because to me, like you said, he's more of a game manager than anything. And Taysom Hill,
it's a lot higher risk and reward with Taysom Hill.
That's kind of where I'm going with this, because we've seen this year, especially Lamar Jackson, he's got the wheels. Patrick Mahomes can move around. There's so much quarterback mobility. Teddy Bridgewater is not that athletic of a guy. He's not going to scramble around and make a ton of plays with his feet. And like I said, if you go into the draft this year or next year, I think you could probably find a guy that's similar to Teddy Bridgewater in the first or second round if you wanted to go that route, and you wouldn't have to give up such an enormous contract to whoever you end up drafting.
Eddie, which way would you go?
Well, I think Teddy Bridgewater is a fantastic number two. I think he's at best a mid-level number one. But if you're going to make me pick between Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill, I'm going to go ahead and take the safer bet and take Bridgewater.
Roberto, you make it unanimous?
Yeah, I don't think either guy is a franchise quarterback. I think Taysom Hill is more like an Antoine Randall L kind of guy. But you have to pick, I'll say Teddy Bridgewater.
All right, so let's play this out forward. Let's say that I'm correct and Drew Brees is going to come back, and that means that the Saints are going to probably have to let Teddy Bridgewater go. Would you rather have, and I think there are a lot of different teams that will look at Teddy Bridgewater, but there are a lot of Tampa Bay Buccaneer fans, I think, who are out there saying, I'm not a believer in Jameis. Would you rather have Teddy Bridgewater or Jameis Winston? Let's presume that Phillip Rivers is going to go to Indianapolis, where he's favored to go. Then you're looking around the free agent marketplace. There's not a lot of directions that Tampa Bay could go unless they decide to trade into the draft and make a move there. Would you rather have Teddy Bridgewater with Bruce Arians in that offense throwing the ball to a really talented wide receiver core, let's be honest, and Bruce Arians, who has proven himself, or would you rather have Jameis Winston?
Wow, this is a good question.
Because I think if you look at Teddy Bridgewater, let's say that we get the expected moves that we think. Like,
yeah.
I think that Dak is going to ultimately end up in Dallas, maybe franchised. I think that that Tom Brady is going to end up in New England. I think if you really look around, the more I think about it, I can see Phillip Rivers going to Indianapolis. There are a lot of teams that will be drafting quarterbacks. But for terms of starters, if you're not convinced that Jameis Winston is your guy, I think it's possible that the best option the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have on the free agent market is Teddy Bridgewater, assuming Brees comes back and they give the reins as the number two to Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
What then do you do if you're Tampa Bay? Do you stick with Jameis Winston and bring him back for another year, maybe even franchise tag him? I don't know, because I'm sure that Tampa Bay is unlikely to want a long-term deal with Jameis Winston as they enter year six with him. Or do you go with Teddy Bridgewater?
If Jameis can calm down in his second year with Bruce Arians, who everybody thinks is a quarterback guru, if Jameis without those turnovers will be one of the top five, top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. So I'd be interested to see.
Yeah, 30 turnovers. Not like he had four.
I understand, but.
And he's been an interception thrower and a turnover machine for his entire career,
hey,
even going back to Florida State.
I so think has Phillip point, Rivers, and you sang his praises on yesterday's
well,
show.
Phillip Rivers historically has been infinitely better than Jameis Winston.
Well, Phillip, it's a much bigger sample size, but he's a turnover machine.
He had
veteran.
10 less interceptions than Jameis Winston this past year. That's
still
a pretty big difference.
Still a ton.
It's a big difference in terms of having less, and he's 38. So I think, again, Phillip Rivers is on the backside
but
of his
But they throw
career.
The same, and Eddie can speak to this because he's watched a lot of Chargers football, and I'm friends with a couple of Chargers fans who what frustrated them about Phillip Rivers, it was boom or bust. He'd throw a beautiful long bomb, and on the next series, he'd throw an interception right to the defender.
Yeah.
It's the kind of turnovers
Rivers
he
is
makes.
A Hall of Famer. Jameis Winston is a guy who's holding on to his NFL careers by his fingertip right now. So I don't really see those guys as being very similar. And I don't think that suddenly Jameis Winston is going to – I mean, he threw 30
picks. But you
picks.
Would get rid of Jameis over the turnovers, but I'm saying Phillip Rivers also is going to give you a lot of turnovers. So
Phillip Rivers has been nowhere near as turnover-prone as Jameis Winston over the course of his career.
Well, I'd love to hear a Chargers fan opinion about this.
Well, it's not – I mean, it's not an opinion. It's a fact. Never had a 30-interception guy – in what, like the last 15 years or 20 years of the NFL?
But Phillip Rivers has averaged a lot of turnovers.
Nowhere near Jameis Winston. I mean, Phillip Rivers is going to be a Hall of Famer. Jameis Winston is, at best, I think, a backup.
Neither of them have won anything.
Hall of Fame quarterback.
Okay.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
But you want to take him on his last leg and replace him with Winston, who might
That's
succeed.
That's not even a debate right now. It's Teddy Bridgewater or Jameis Winston.
But you're pulling Winston maybe out of Tampa Bay, and you said you could see Phillip Rivers landing there.
Looking at things more and more, I believe Phillip Rivers is going to go to Indianapolis. So I'm saying if you have to make a choice between Teddy Bridgewater or Jameis Winston, what direction would you go if you're Tampa Bay? Because that's the way I see this potentially lining up for Tampa Bay. They may not have the free agent marketplace that they had hoped. The most likely outcome, the more and more I look at it, is that Phillip Rivers goes to Indianapolis. And so who is out there that's a free agent quarterback? They're not going to go with Mariota. They're not going to go with Case Keenum. Who is out there that they could potentially replace Jameis Winston with? Now, they could go into the draft. But to me, Teddy Bridgewater may be the most likely outcome and option for them. By the way, I also think Ryan Tannehill will be staying in Nashville. So I think the number of moving quarterbacks is ultimately going to be lower than anticipated.
Well, to be fair, those odds of him going to Indy are recent, because you did think when he moved his family to Florida that all signs pointed to Phillip Rivers going to Tampa Bay.
Thinking about it more, I think that Indianapolis makes more sense.
Because of the Frank Reich connection?
Yes. And also because I could see Phillip Rivers wanting to play in a dome. I think that the Colts don't really believe in Jacoby Brissett. And so this would give them an opportunity to have a bridge for a couple of years until they go into the draft and go and get a new play, a new quarterback. So I think the Colts make the most sense for Phillip Rivers. Now, the Bucs make the second most sense. But I think the question could very well be on Bruce Arians' desk of, hey, what do you think about Teddy Bridgewater compared to Jameis Winston? If they're both unrestricted free agents, which would you rather have? Dub, which would you rather have?
This is a tough one, because selfishly, I hope it's Jameis Winston, because I watch a lot of Bucs games, as I've mentioned, because one of my roommates is from the Tampa area, and he might be my favorite watch in the entire league, because you never know what's going to happen. But
he literally throws 5 or 6 balls every single game that could be intercepted.
It's amazing. I love watching him. I mean, it is a roller coaster ride
and
when
he's
you're
got
watching
an
a Bucs game.
Incredible cadre of receivers, and Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, and Perryman, not to mention O.J. Howard, who I think if they could keep him healthy at tight end. I mean, he has a lot of playmakers at the wide receiver position and at tight end.
And he probably has the shortest memory in NFL history, which I really respect. But in terms of answering your question, it is a tough one for me, because like you said, and like what Danny G mentioned, the turnovers are just absolutely insane. I mean, he turned the ball over, not only the 30 interceptions last year, but I think he had something like 18 fumbles. So that's
it's
more
true.
Than one a game.
There's no one close to Jameis Winston when it comes to turning the ball over in the NFL. When you combine interceptions and fumbles, I mean, he is a turnover machine.
And with that being said, it'd be hard if you can get Bridgewater at a fair
almost
price.
Never turns the ball over.
Exactly. They're almost polar opposites in a way, the style of play. So that would be an interesting dynamic into this decision-making process for the Buccaneers, because on one end, you've got the gunslinger who's willing to air it out to all those great targets you have. And then you have Teddy Bridgewater, who, you know, obviously the sample size isn't as big, but his time in Minnesota, he really was a true game manager. And then what we saw from him this year in New Orleans, he won those games in Drew Brees' absence, but they didn't really ask him to do too much. So it's not like he was in there, you know, dominating these games and taking over these games. It was, you know, a healthy dose to Michael Thomas and then a lot of running the ball. So to me, I think I would go Teddy Bridgewater, just because he won't turn the ball over nearly as much as Jameis, and maybe they could open things up a little bit more for him now that he would, you know that he's a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Where would you go, Eddie, if you had that choice? Because I think it could come down to Teddy Bridgewater versus Jameis Winston decision for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Jameis has always been a turnover waiting to happen from his times at Florida State. So he's been consistent with his decision-making at every level, well, the last two levels, college and pro. I don't think he has the ability to change, unfortunately. So I think I would have to go Teddy Bridgewater. He may not win a ton of games for you, but he's not going to lose a ton of games for you either.
Yeah, it's the way that I think makes the most sense. What about you, Roberto?
Yeah, I agree. Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis Winston just makes too many turnovers and then takes you out of scoring drives because of all the turnovers that he makes, man.
I do think that this could really turn into an interesting debate for Tampa Bay going forward, because, again, if you start to look at the chessboard and you presume, like I do, that Tom Brady's going to ultimately decide to stay in New England, that Dak is either going to get franchised or they're going to work out a deal in some way down in Dallas, that Ryan Tannehill is going to get worked out in Nashville with the Titans, and that Drew Brees is going to come back, then I think it's possible that the best free agent quarterback that is unrestricted in terms of hitting the market and being relatively young in the grand scheme of things compared to a Phillip Rivers, who I think will end up in Indianapolis, could be Teddy Bridgewater versus Jameis Winston for an intriguing decision to be made. All right, we're going to be joined next by Shannon Spake, who has been joining us weekly here of late. She has got the Daytona 500 and more. We will discuss that with her.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We got Jeff Shorts, we're bringing him in right now. You heard when you play in the story about my health. I felt like I'm still going to die here. I don't think I have the coronavirus, Jeff Schwartz, but I've never missed a day for being sick of radio or TV. But I was hoping I was going to feel better today than I did yesterday, and I'm not sure that's the case.
I've been sick for a week now, buddy. So I don't know. I'm the wrong person to complain to. I've been battling through. My daughter's sitting in my lap right now, 103 feet. She's sick over here, man.
Is it the flu?
No. You know, so my son was sick at the end of like Super Bowl week. I came home and he was fine after two or three days. Then I got sick. I have like the chest cold, the yeah. fever, can't sleep at night, and then so I've been battling through the radio too. And I don't have a cough button on my radio, so yeah. I'm like sitting at home, so it's been rough. And then now she got sick. I don't think she has the flu. I think she just has a fever. So, man, it's running through our family right now.
Yeah, that's the tough thing about when you have young kids is, like, it's basically like a Petri dish in the family. One kid gets sick, and it runs through everybody, and mom and dad often get it as well, all in the same house. We were talking – have you ever been on a cruise?
Yes, one time, and my wife and I, we were dating about a year, and my wife got so sick on the cruise because she took too much seasick medicine, and yep. she was actually plotting to leave me in Mexico, and she had her whole plan set up to, like, just, like, disappear one day and never come home again.
That's an incredible story, but you're a big guy. You didn't fit very well, I bet, on the cruise ship.
Yeah, we're never going on a cruise again.
So can you imagine, in hour one, we talked with the family, the husband and wife, who are being quarantined on that Japanese cruise ship where everybody's got the coronavirus.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine being stuck in your room there?
I'd be very upset. And I saw the story where they had to, like, they needed toilet paper to survive. Like, there was no toilet paper left on board anymore, no food. I wouldn't do very well. I don't know how I get off the plane, but I'd pull every shirt I ever had to get off that plane.
To get off the boat, yeah. I mean, whatever you have to do. We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. All right, let's dive into this NFL free agent marketplace. If you were predicting right now, Tom Brady is the quarterback where in 2020?
New England. I think this is the best option for him. I've said this for months now, that I can't imagine at age 43, his idea is to now get paid, right? You know, quote-unquote paid. And there's plenty of places that will pay him, right? We know the Chargers will probably do it. We know John Gruden would probably love to have him. Maybe even the Titans would choose him over Ryan Tannehill. But the goal, I think, at his age is to win, right? And if the Patriots can bring back a couple of pieces, they go get themselves a tight end, maybe a Hunter Henry and another wide receiver, then they're able to run it back and win. I mean, that's his goal also, too. I mean, this is not talked about enough. He has a routine, right? He's been the same place now for his entire career. He has a routine. He has his trainer in the building. He has unlimited access. You know, he has perks of obviously playing there forever. His kids are in school. And does he want to uproot everything he has for like 2 years to make $5 million more a year? It just feels really silly and something that Tom Brady would probably not entertain. I think he might look around and realize that New England is his best option to win. I do think that the reports about him maybe testing the market is probably true. If I were him, I would want to see New England make a commitment to adding pieces before I find out. I mean, if they add no one else, then yeah, maybe I do consider leaving. So I would maybe take the first couple of days of free agency with maybe an idea in mind. I'd come back to New England at a certain price and let them know that, but also let them see if they go ahead and get me a tight end, get me a wide receiver, if they re-sign some of my offensive linemen, because I wouldn't go back if they don't do anything, right? But I think that New England probably wants to let this, try to win another title or two in the next couple of years.
What do you think Dak Prescott's worth a year? Because there seems to be a disconnect between what Dak wants and what the Cowboys are willing to pay him. And that's not necessarily uncommon when it comes to negotiation, but the Cowboys, it appears, have at least contemplated the idea of franchise tagging him, which creates its own mess. But if you're the Dallas Cowboys, what's the dollar figure where you would go and you wouldn't go above it for Dak Prescott to sign him to a long-term deal?
This is a really fascinating storyline. I wrote yesterday on SB Nation, I put it on my Twitter as well. This is approaching, in my opinion, the Cousins Redskins impasse we saw for a couple of years, where Dak wants a certain number. Supposedly the Cowboys offered him $33 million this offseason, but they wanted too many years on the contract, and Dak's people wanted less years. They were okay with the number, and so they're at an impasse, right? The Cowboys want something. Dak's representatives want something, and no one's going to budge. They both think they have the leverage, and the leverage, I think, is the franchise tag. The franchise tag for quarterback really is no win for both. I mean, you know, you're making money, and you're – if you're a quarterback, but you don't have that long-term security. If you're the team, you know you have a quarterback for 1 year, but again, you don't have the long-term security of knowing what he's going to make and how, you know, building a roster around him, you know, penciling in, really putting in Sharpie what your quarterback makes and figuring out how to build a roster around him. So it's not the ideal situation for either party to get a franchise tag. But I think the Cowboys are smartly approaching this. They're saying, look, we have a price in mind, and probably is that $33 to $35 million price range. We're not going to budge off of that because we don't think you're worth more than that. We might not even think you're worth the 35, but we'll pay you that anyways. And on Dak's side, he's looking at obviously Pat Mahomes. Look, Mahomes' deal, in my opinion, has nothing to do with Dak.
Right.
Dak might think that he has something to do with it, not at all. But also, you know, the new CBA might be agreed upon, you know, this spring. We'll see. They have another year to figure it out, but there seems to be a lot of movement to that happening, and if that does happen, then our salaries will surely increase, I think, with the proposed increase in revenue by a percentage point and a half. So he might be just waiting to see what that is, and if there is an agreed upon CBA, you know, signing a better contract, you know, that matches our new revenue pool. So there's it's really interesting. It's a really interesting story. I don't think the Cowboys are totally in on Dak as much as, you know, maybe the Eagles were with Carson Wentz or the Rams were with Jared Goff. So really fascinating to follow what happens in Dallas. I do not think Tom Brady is an option in Dallas, but I do think it's fun to speculate what they might do. Maybe they go get themselves a Justin Herbert or Jordan Love and start over again. It'll be interesting to find out.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. I was just talking about the idea of Tony Romo. I'm told he's going to get $15 to $20 million a year. In order to be the new announcer for either ESPN or to stay at CBS. As part of that, I'm going to get your read on that in a minute, but as part of that, I was saying, if you're smart, you look at other people who do your profession and you root for them to be as successful as possible. So when you were in the NFL, did you look at other offensive linemen and root for them to get as much money as you could when they were free agents as they could?
Yeah, because it increases your money.
Yeah. Yeah,
of course. Yeah, of course you'd want more. You want someone to make more. Now, there were times, obviously, you think that, I'm sure you think this, that there's people in our industry that get paid too much and you're better than them and you should make what they make. But it obviously helps you, right, in negotiation when it's your time. You say, hey, look, this person's making this much. I'm better than them. This is what I should make. So that is true as well. But, yes, anytime someone gets paid more money in your industry, especially if you're up for a new contract soon, that's helpful for you. So I've never rooted against anyone to make money. I think those guys are overpaid, but never I thought, you know, that they shouldn't get paid and it doesn't help everyone else.
All right, so what is a dollar figure to you? So the Romo, I'm pretty confident, $15 to $20 million. Now, there's moving parts here, and I think I'm going to write about this on Outkick later today, but the moving parts are that ESPN wants to get the Super Bowl, right? They're going to move Monday Night Football, word is, to ABC and simulcast it as well. So spending big money for Romo is basically the ESPN, Disney, ABC letting the NFL know, hey, we're desperate to get a deal done with you. We want Monday Night Football to be as big of an event as it possibly can. Meanwhile, CBS has to go out and reclaim their version of the NFL package. And so there's a lot of interest in sending messages to the NFL about how committed CBS is as well. So that's the backstory for why this dollar figure could go up so much. But this is crazy because it's possible Romo ends up making more money to call football games than he ever made to play football for the Dallas Cowboys at quarterback.
So here's my question for you, Clay, on all this, is how many people tune into a telecast to hear the broadcasters? Like, I know that Romo is fantastic, and I do enjoy listening to him. But I think a lot of us would tune in if there was no broadcaster, right? Like we watched no matter what. So how much is he actually worth to the telecast? I can't imagine he's worth $15 million to the telecast for the season, right? I mean, like, we're going to tune into Monday Night Football no matter what. We've been tuning in no matter what already, and so I've always wondered that, right? Like, how much is he actually worth it to people to actually tune in? Because it's funny, you know, look at the XFL this weekend. A lot of people liked a lot of elements that weren't the football, right? And I guess it's a startup league, and I think the XFL did a good job of garnering interest on things outside of football. But that's going to wane pretty soon, right, where people are going to tune in to watch the football and not, you know, what Pat McAfee is to say on the sidelines, correct? So how much is he actually worth, you think, to people actually saying, I'm going to watch Monday Night Football or CBS's Game of the Week on Sunday because of Tony Romo?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, I mean, the response I would say is every Super Bowl ad sells for about $6 million each. So so if ESPN is able to get into the Super Bowl rotation, Fox just announced that they did a revenue of $500 million on the Super Bowl, right? That one game. So if you think about it in that context, if Romo gives you an opportunity better, even if he just increases the chances that you get the Super Bowl by 5 or 10% in an 8-year deal, you're talking about $1 billion more in revenue that you get because you get in that Super Bowl rotation. So to me, this is where Romo becomes, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, a pawn in the larger chess match, but it's a pretty valuable pawn. If you play chess, it's like the pawn that's about to become a queen. You know, you're almost to the other end of the table, and he can be the difference maker that flips the outcome of this game going to you. So I think that factors in. And the flip side is, for CBS, it's an embarrassment if ESPN beats them for Romo, having just beaten them to take away the SEC, right? Because a lot of people are going to say, what is CBS going to be able to do when they go after the NFL? Because Disney is just so much of a bigger company than CBS.
Yeah, no, the Super Bowl part of what you said, I think, is really, really smart. Because I agree that if it helps them get the Super Bowl, obviously they would do it. One thing that also is interesting about, you know, the way ESPN panels of personalities, a lot of them, you know, they're on multiple platforms, right? Does Romo want to do multiple platforms or just call the game? That might be something that CBS can offer him that ESPN doesn't really want. I got to imagine if Romo's calling Monday Night Football, they want him on Get Up once a week and write other things across the platform, because he'd be really good at that. So, yeah, it's really interesting. And you know, CBS will have more money to spend as they lose the SEC. I made a joke, you know, with you before, but, you know, the Pac-12 on SEC is going to be something that people are going to truly despise. I mean, look, the Pac-12 can't even keep, you know, their coach in the 11th best program. You know, he went to Michigan State last night. So we're just a mess right now. But all this, it's really interesting how much, you know, the TV rights are going for. I really think with the NFL, you know, some of these streaming services are going to make a huge play to get some of this content, whether it's Sunday Ticket, whether it's, you know, some sort of a bigger package. Because I think we're moving in that direction. That could change it. The money that the streaming services has is unlimited, and I wonder if, you know, they make a play into the NFL. There's about to be a lot of money in the NFL, this new CBA, I think.
Do you think Eric Bieniemy goes to Colorado? You were just mentioning that Mel Tucker is going to Michigan State. For people who are waking up this morning, they may not have heard that. That's been reported late last night. Would Eric Bieniemy going back to his alma mater make a lot of sense?
I think it would. Now the question becomes, obviously, if he thinks he can get a pro job in one more year, then does he stay in the NFL? Because I think that he's on track to get that pro job. And obviously, Colorado's alma mater, and I believe he coached before there, or maybe he was assistant under John Embry. So if they call him, I think he's going to listen to that. This Michigan State deal is wild to me, how much money there is every conference outside the Pac-12 now. I mean, Michigan State is a middle of the pack Big Ten job, right? If you look at, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa, Minnesota right now, they paid Mel Tucker, a coach who has 1 year experience as a head coach, almost $6 million a year. And they gave his assistants like four. That's crazy amount of money. Like, there's the money in college football in these conferences with their new TV deals. Is wild. In my conference, the Pac-12 is falling way behind. We can't pay anyone $6 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. The Big Ten and the SEC are in a different category from a financial perspective. All right, Philip Rivers obviously is a free agent now as well. We talked about Tom Brady. Where do you think Rivers goes, and do you have any wacky prediction in the free agent market that maybe isn't getting a lot of attention that you think, hey, I could see this guy ending up here?
I think Philip Rivers should go to broadcasting. If I were to make a guess on what he does. I mean, look, I think he's still got some left in him, but we're moving to an era now where the statue quarterback is no longer desirable. And if you look around the NFL, I mean, which team is really begging for a quarterback that can't move? I mean, maybe the Colts and their offensive line and their weapons, you think, okay, we'll add in a Phillip Rivers and maybe they'll help us. But I just don't see many options for a quarterback who's old and can't move. If Tom Brady did win all the Super Bowls, everyone would be like, well, he's out too, right? I think he goes to broadcasting. I think he'll make a lot of money doing it if he wants to. Maybe he takes a year off of football. He's obviously moved to Florida with his 9 kids. God, you 9 kids. I can't imagine that.
Yeah,
that
right.
Oh, man. I don't think he's as desirable as people might think he is in this market. As far as wild free agency, I mean, look, I floated on my podcast about 2 months ago, Tom Brady going to Dallas with Josh McDaniels. I don't think that's going to happen now. Look, your favorite team, the Titans, have some interesting decisions because, paying a running back is not really smart anymore. And then also, I don't think Ryan Tannehill will be the same guy next year, too. So what the Titans do is really interesting. Are they going to pay both, pay one of them? What are they going to do? Fascinating.
Yeah, no, it is indeed. Appreciate the time, my man. We will talk to you next week.
All right, take care, bud.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Colorado football coach Mel Tucker is leaving Colorado Buffaloes to take over as the head coach of Michigan State after only 1 year at Colorado. Maybe Colorado could go get Eric Bieniemy, who was a coaching candidate in the NFL, if he wants to come to college. Michigan State keeps sweetening their offer. They needed to find a coach. Reports are that they have got their man, and it is Mel Tucker, and he will be traveling from Colorado to Michigan State to take over. And in fact, if you remember this, we interviewed him and talked about his beginning in coaching, and it was as a graduate assistant with Nick Saban at Michigan State. We had him on the Wins and Losses podcast recently, and he talked, maybe we need to pull that audio. He talked about sleeping under his desk at Michigan State, and ultimately, I think his desire was to stay at Colorado. But reports are that he got approaching $6 million a year to go take over as the Michigan State coach. And I don't care who you are. At some point, there is a dollar figure where if somebody keeps coming to you, you will say, you know what? I think I got to take this job. And I think that's what Michigan State did after they were embarrassed by the Luke Fickell decline of the job. And certainly after Pat Narduzzi at Pitt had turned it down, they like to think they're bigger program than either Pitt or Cincinnati. So to have both of those coaches turn you down and decide to stay, and Robert Saleh out at San Francisco 49ers said thanks but no thanks, I think they all kind of focused on Mel Tucker as the best option that they had, and they said, we got to get this done. It doesn't matter what it ends up costing. So as a result, an interesting hire by Michigan State with Mark D'Antonio stepping down to have to make the decision to replace him unexpectedly 1 year at Colorado for Mel Tucker, and he has now taken over at Michigan State. That is the big story there. The other interesting story that I think broke basically on hour two on the program, and I'm going to write about this later today at Outkick, is Tony Romo looking like he's going to make $15 or $20 million a year to be the head man on the broadcast team for either CBS with Jim Nantz or a reformatted broadcast team with ESPN. That's amazing because right now his salary is just $3 million a year. This would set a new gold standard for how much you can be paid to call games. And it's even wilder when you think about the fact that Tony Romo never made much more than $21 million a year as a starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He may be able to make that same amount almost to be calling games now for either CBS or ESPN. And if you find that story to be intriguing, I'll be writing about it in a little bit on Outkick. Encourage you guys to check out that article because it has the potential to be absolutely seismic. Encourage you all to go download the podcast. January was the best podcast month ever. I expect for February to be even better than that, even though it's a short month. We have got 3 great interviews with you. First hour, we talked with an individual who was on the cruise ship that is quarantined in Japan as the coronavirus is stalking there. Hour two, Jeff Schwartz is with us talking NFL free agency. And in hour three, with the Daytona 500, Shannon Spake swung by and hung out. Thanks all of you for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel on Thursday. Lock it in later today as well. Trying to get over this sickness. Roberto, good luck getting healthy, my man.
Thank you.
As he is fighting it as well. Hopefully by tomorrow I'll be back to 100%. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.